Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the air.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. My co-host, Souther Teague, is out of town at the moment. Good for him. Welcome to 2018. Happy New Year to everyone. And thanks for tuning in again. It's been another fun season. Dave's been out of town as well. Where were you, Dave?
I was in Costa Rica and then London.
Man.
I got around.
I went to Jersey.
Oh.
No, actually, I was in Italy for the last week. But
Jersey, Italy.
Jersey, Italy. Yeah, man. How was it?
It was fantastic. Costa Rica is beautiful. I highly recommend it.
Were
if you like
surfing?
The beach. And I was body surfing. I body surf. The waves were incredible. The ocean temp, incredible. And it was really clear. There wasn't all that crap in it like in, say, Jersey.
Don't talk about Jersey surfing scene.
I did get a little sick, but not till after, luckily. So.
Oh, good. Good, yeah. Man. Well, happy New Year to you, buddy.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks. So getting into the show today, this year, we are starting out the year with a lot of really cool guests coming up, and one of my favorite people, not just a favorite bartender, even guest, but one of my just favorite people in the world happens to be here in the studio today. A fantastic artist, great bartender, and especially a great host. Welcome to the show, John Thibault.
Oh, thank you very much.
You like that intro?
Yeah, it was wonderful. Thank you.
I meant every word.
You big galoot.
So, let's get into it, buddy.
Yeah.
This is your first time on the show.
Yes.
Which is kind of shocking to me because I mean, well, we've done a lot of shows nowadays. On the Speakeasy, we're almost at 300 episodes, and I feel like I've had everyone on the show. But it's also a big, beautiful world out there, and there's plenty more opportunities to get people on the show. And long story short, I'm happy to have you here. Yeah. So let's get into it. Who is John Thibault?
Well, he's a young man from Michigan who came to New York, and now I'm working at a bar down in Red Hook called Fort Defiance, mm-hmm. and I've been doing artwork for most of my life, I guess, and semi-professionally or professionally for the last maybe 25 years, and living in Brooklyn with my wife, Colleen.
Colleen is my other favorite person.
Isn't that convenient that we're together?
You guys are actually just the sweetest couple I've ever met in my life, first of all.
Aww. Who are they?
So you are both from Michigan. You met there.
And, that's right.
And moved to Brooklyn. How long ago?
It was about, it was 12 years ago we moved to Manhattan from Ann Arbor. And then about 9 years ago, we moved from Manhattan to Brooklyn.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you've been working at St. John's place, Fort Defiance, with a bunch of our buddies.
Yeah.
Good people. Does that help out, like, being in such a cool part of Brooklyn? Does that, like, really inform some of your artwork? For our listeners, I want to say that John does a lot of really amazing illustration work and a lot of the illustrations are of very iconic bars and taverns around not only in New York City but in other cities. You were just actually in New Orleans, for a while. For How many days?
Well, it was about 10 days this time. We try to go down every year at least once, sometimes twice. And sometimes we stay for a long time. This time it was about 10 days.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, like working at Fort Defiance, St. John's a huge New Orleans fan, you know?
Yeah, well, he went to Tulane and then stayed down there for a while. He loved it so much. And so the Saints game was a little rough, but but he bounced back.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, we've got a lot to talk about, but let's talk about that recent trip to New Orleans. I mean, you picked a really great time to be there. I mean, you got out of a lot of the blizzard that we just had.
Missed it.
You missed it.
Yeah.
I mean, it snowed a little this morning, but it didn't really stick.
No, no, no. But when we were down in New Orleans, it actually snowed on the north side of Lake Pontchartrain.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was their second snowfall of the season, which is ridiculous for them. And they had the third today. That's, people say that never happens.
Yeah,
so true. Something's going on. But when we were down there, it was still pretty cold. There were lows in the 20s about half the time we were there, and highs in the mid to high 30s. But it wasn't as bad as it was up here in New York.
Well, you get enough like Sazeracs and Irish coffees in you.
Yeah, yeah.
Warm you right up.
Mm-hmm.
What are your what are some of your favorite places? I mean, like we were talking right before the show that like. Sometimes you and Colleen will go down for like 2 months at a time.
Yeah, we've done that. Yeah.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
No, it's sane. It's really, really good for you. It's a good antidote to New York. And we had a lot of friends that had bounced back and forth. And I'm sure a lot of people listening know that there's kind of a connection between Brooklyn and New Orleans. There's sort of a thread between them. Yeah, and so we've been down there for the longest, what we call them sabbaticals, about 2 months. And the least we go down there now is maybe 10 days.
Yeah. Do you stay in different parts of the city? Do you go to, like, Bywater, Marigny? Like, do you stay in the quarter?
Yeah.
Like, you try to keep it different, switch it up?
Yeah, yeah. Well, when we started going down there, like most people, we would stay in the quarter and try to find funky hotels to stay at. And then we started staying uptown. We had a friend that had a house uptown. And so we stayed in the Lower Garden District and just rented out her little house for a couple of months, and then found other people that were renting houses or rooms. And even if you rent a whole house down there for a month, it's cheaper than a one bedroom in parts of Brooklyn.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, as most of the listeners probably share this experience, it's mostly when they're down there in July for Tales of the Cocktail.
Right.
I've never been there in the middle of winter. It must be cool. I mean, like you said, it was in the 20s.
Lows, yeah.
The lows, yeah. I mean, does that change the vibe much about, like, because, like, again, like, I've been there for, like, Jazz Fest and, like, spring and then, you know, Tales during the summer, and then I've been there in the fall, but I've never been there in the winter. And so, like, everything that I know is, like, because I've never been there for, like, Mardi Gras or anything like that. Like, the latest I've been there is, like, Halloween, which for anyone who doesn't want to go for Mardi Gras, Halloween's kind of like the local, like, fun party vibes, except, you know, less puke.
They do it well. I mean, everybody in New Orleans has a costume room, for God's sake.
Yeah.
You know, you go to somebody's house and they'll be, here's the kitchen, here's the bedroom, and here's our costume room. So they're happy to have Halloween come around, and they just go bananas with that. But yeah, it's the winter's a really good time to go because it's so temperate compared to what we're used to, or what you're used to if you go down there between Jazz Fest and Halloween, where it can be ridiculous.
Yeah,
very hot and humid. Where in the winter there, at least when we were there, felt like a beautiful late November day here.
Yeah.
Blue skies, completely dry, no humidity. The weather was a little chilly, being in the 20s and 30s, but it smelled better than July, even Bourbon Street.
Yeah. Like I was saying before, like, you must be an old pro at New Orleans now. I mean, I know that like 3 years ago at Tales of the Cocktail, you actually had a couple of art openings at Preservation Hall, correct?
Yeah, that's right. That's
like
right.
The iconic jazz club. Mm-hmm. That's insane. That must have been like cool. A defining moment in your life, right?
It was a great experience. I have a lot of great experiences.
Sure.
I'm so lucky. And my wife made it happen. Colleen awesome. Made it happen.
Nice.
Because she's buddies with the crew over there at Preservation Hall. She got to know them through social media and then has done consulting for them. And I drew a bunch of drawings of bars in New Orleans, and she said, could we do an art show at Preservation Hall? And they said, yeah. So we threw a party in the back courtyard, and another artist named Emily Reese and I showed our artwork in the back rooms. There are storage rooms and back rooms off of that courtyard. And they wanted to have not one, but two opening parties for the show. So we had one on Friday night of Tales and one on Saturday. And they were pretty late. I think we started at like 11 o'clock and they ran, and they had a band and a bar set up back there. So it ended up being a blast. It was an honor to show there. It was very cool.
You know, we should drop your website. So while the listeners are listening, they can actually be looking at your artwork.
Yeah.
If they have a computer or phone in front of them.
Yeah, well, you could go to www.tebow.com, and that's T-E-B, as in boy, E-A-U. It's not like Tim Tebow. Well, every Tebow spells it differently, it seems, but this is T-E-B-E-A-U. But you can also just Google up my name, John Tebow. Yeah, and
go to the Instagram.
Yeah, stuff will come up. Cool. Images will come up, so you can see that kind of those Thanks. Kinds of things. But yeah, I did some of the bars down in New Orleans that I love.
Like
which ones?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Parasols is probably my favorite place in New Orleans.
Really?
Yeah, for eating and drinking. It's a small dive in the Irish Channel. It's a corner bar. I don't know how old the building is, but it's kind of tippy and leany. So it's pretty old, but it's got a dining room on one side, just pretty much looks like a cafeteria. And then on the other side is a perfect corner dive. And man, their food is good. And their beer's cold and cheap. And then other places, some of the classics like Lafitte's in the Quarter, Aaron Rose, which is a real
of
good.
Course. Get the frozen.
People love. Yeah.
The frozen coffee.
Aaron Rose is so good. Everybody's getting a frozen coffee down there now. Parasols has a good one. Aaron Rose does. Molly's at the Market on Decatur Street. That's another one I drew. And a couple others.
So, okay. I kind of want to ask the chicken or the egg situation, like what came first, you know, like drawing these different taverns, saloons, restaurants, or like were you into the bar side of things first, or did you go to school for art? I mean, where did the beginning of this fascination come that led you into this whole wacky world that we're in?
Well, you know, it basically comes from a love of place. I just love places. I love hanging out at places. And I think the whole tavern and bar thing, it goes back to childhood because my dad was an owner of a restaurant and a saloon in my hometown in Michigan. And his dad was the owner of two speakeasies in Detroit back in the 20s. And so it was just real normal for my parents to take us out when we were kids to taverns and restaurants with bars. I mean, we wouldn't go to dive bars with my parents. They weren't like that anyway. And but it was just real normal for us to go to the local places, like Fricano's Pizzeria and the Bear Lake Tavern and places like that in our hometown. And there's just a lot of camaraderie there. You know, they'd see their friends would be there with their kids. We'd play pinball and Pac-Man and shuffle bowl and stuff like that. So I always just kind of like these places as hangouts and social centers and just good vibes at places like that. Totally. So it goes way back to that.
Nice. So it kind of, in a way, it found you instead of...
I think I was born into
it.
And then I didn't go to school for art at all. I just taught myself. I went to school for economics. That's...
I think there's a show on Heritage about that.
I don't know why. I don't know why. But I always
No one ever really knows why they go into whatever degree they're going for.
Why in the world do they send kids to school at 17 or 18
and no to decide? Idea.
I should have worked for 2 years. I should have gone to community college and worked.
So traveled.
Well, yeah, that too. But just do something and then figure out, you know what I like to do? I like to work with my hands. I hate economics. It's stupid. Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, so I graduated from Michigan with an economics degree, and then in short order started doing artwork after graduation. After one real job, I started doing artwork. Printing T-shirts was my first paying artistic gig. Yeah, silk screening. I was designing them, and
you're like working on your forearm strength.
Dude, they were ropey. yeah, it was fun, but that was in Chicago.
Chicago.
Yeah, that's a great town, too.
You know what? I don't spend enough time there.
You should.
I've only been there once on tour with the band, and we didn't really get to kick around. Of course, that was like, I think that was right before Alinea and all that stuff had started opening. So,
yeah.
I mean, what's the whiskey bar, the punk rock whiskey bar?
In Chicago?
Yeah.
You're asking the wrong guy.
Delilah's.
Oh, yeah. On Lincoln.
That was definitely there.
Yeah.
When we were there. But we were on a tight schedule. Anyway, it's definitely...
You got to go back. Chicago's having a good moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of great places there. And there's still some of the old places, too. I mean, I love Chicago pizza. Yeah. I don't understand New Yorkers that hate it, but there's still some of the great old. It's like look at it as a casserole. If you don't like it as pizza, think of it as a casserole because it's delicious. And so I love to go have their pizza. And Billy Goat Tavern is still there, and it's so weird and it hasn't changed one bit. It's underneath Michigan Avenue, and it's just this old kind of sports bar / diner grill place. That all the newspaper men used to go to, and it's still there, and it's still weird and cool.
Have you drawn that one?
No. I draw the exteriors though, and the exterior of that place is really generic and not great looking. But actually, it's one of a kind, so I probably could draw it, and people would love it.
Cool. Let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking with our buddy John Thibault.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hey, and we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. In the studio today, we have my buddy John Thibault, and we've been talking about some of his artwork. He does great saloon, tavern drawings. You recently, I know that you have a book coming out. We're not allowed to talk too much about it yet, but I'm very excited about it. I recently acquired a very, very nice gift from you.
Mm.
A print of my bar, Grand Army,
right,
which I'm having framed at the moment.
Oh,
and it will be residing over table 4.
Oh, yeah, place of honor.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Right between the fireplace and the firewood.
Yeah, it's a nice spot.
And it's a safe place. It's
good,
cozy.
Good.
So, one of the things I really like about you and your wife, Colleen, like you're both very, very great, generous hosts. And you have actually brought a bottled cocktail, a boomerang, as it were.
Right.
If you know the old nomenclature of the bar industry here. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to pour this drink out and mix it up. And while I'm doing that, why don't you tell me the background of it.
Well, this drink is called Le Grand Père, which means the grandfather, and it was invented or developed by Zach Overman, who used to be the bar manager at Fort Defiance down in Red Hook, where I work right now. And Zach now runs a wonderful place in Seattle called Lor's Hen.
Owns it, right?
Yeah, right. And this is a drink with Armagnac and some chocolate bitters. And I think it's prune syrup is in there.
Yeah.
Do I have that right? It's quite a nice, thick, viscous, rich syrup. And you serve it on the rocks and give it an orange twist. And it's a wonderful wintertime drink.
Cool. Looks good. Smells great. Mm-hmm. You just like stirring it in the microphone, right?
Yeah, right. It tastes better than it sounds, actually.
No, it all sounds great to me. Here you go.
And I mean, when I say better than it sounds, it sounds like a drink being mixed, and it tastes even better than a drink being mixed.
Cool. Let's try it. That is fucking delicious.
Yeah.
Thanks, Zach.
Leave it to Zach. Yeah. Cheers to Zach.
Yeah, indeed.
What a good guy. He was our gateway drug into Fort Defiance. When Colleen and I would go there, we would sit at the bar quite often at brunch time, sometimes after dinner. Mm-hmm. And when Zach Overman was working, he was just such a great host, just a gracious guy. And he would set up such a welcoming atmosphere. That's kind of why it became one of our favorite places in Brooklyn.
It makes sense that you ended up working there because I feel like a lot of different bars they kind of attract a certain consistent style of bartender. Like there's a certain, like different places will have a staff that shares a certain like demeanor. And I feel like Fort Defiance has that. Everyone is very, very gracious and hospitable. But also they have just this relaxed, like chill vibes. It's just very warm and welcoming. I feel like when Jake Walk was open and it was like Dave Nurmi and Eddie and like Tim Miner, they all had this like just kind of a happy-go-lucky kind of goofball vibe. But they were like serious about what they were doing, but they all had like this... You know what I'm talking about. You know Tim Miner. Yeah, there was like a bunch of Tim Miners.
Yeah, the first time I met Tim, a buddy was in from out of town, and we had to walk down to my studio, my art studio in Red Hook, near the expressway, near the Gowanus Expressway. And we came up Smith Street, and the rain just started pouring. And when we got to Jake Walk, we jumped in, soaking. And Tim Miner grabbed a couple of bar towels, clean bar towels, and brought them out to us and said, "Hey, fellas, dry yourselves off. Sit down. Have a drink."
That's great.
Yeah. Good so guy. Good guy. I love that guy.
Very cool. So as someone who is starting to work on a book myself, could you run me through the kind of scary to me, like nightmarish process that I don't really know what to, I've written articles. How do you start? Like you said, you started with 6 drawings.
Yep.
And like, how did this all start?
Well, I was working at an art supply and framing store in Cobble Hill called KC Arts. Ding. Mm-hmm. Get your stuff framed at KC Arts. I love those guys. And I had a couple of shows of paintings and then wanted to do my next body of work. And I thought, what do I love? I want to do something I love. And I love places. I love, as I said, as we were talking about, I love taverns and joints like that. And having been in Brooklyn for a few years at that point, I had a handful that I loved. So I just drew 6 of them and had silkscreen posters made of them. I already knew how to do t-shirts, so I learned how to do posters. And they turned out really well. And I had a couple of art shows. I had the opening, the first show ever was at Fort Defiance. And St. John Frizzell was kind enough to let me show these prints there. And we had a nice opening and it was a blast. And then I did another show at the Long Island Bar, which is in my neighborhood. And Joel Tompkins and Toby Cicchini let me show them there. And at that point, somebody said, you know, you could do a book out of these. Two people said that. I wrote those little wall labels that explain the art, you know, quote unquote, explain the artwork. But it was mostly why I like these places.
Yeah.
And so a couple of people said you could do a book. And I talked to an agent of a friend of mine that had published books. And the agent's partner in the firm signed me that day and said, I'll get you two book deals by the end of the year. And she did. And I took what I considered the better offer. And it was with Rizzoli Books. They do great work. And that's how the deal went down.
That quick?
Beginner's luck, yeah. that quick.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I'll take it. Like I said, I'm lucky.
That's great, man. Well, it couldn't happen to a better person. So let's start with this. Okay, so when you've illustrated a lot of your favorite places, and what's cool to me is like it's not just like from knowing you and having the conversations and seeing some of the paintings and illustrations of these places. These are places that I also like to because I had dinner at Keen's Chop House, like on Sunday night, like I love places like with vibes like that, you know, like old school vibes. Yeah, I was at Brooklyn Inn last night after work, you know, talking with Kevin, and like those places that are just so iconic and just old school that you can't recreate, you know, they're just legendary, you know. You've really captured, and I kind of want to geek out about your artistic style for a second. I do like the fact that you have a very stark imagery of the contrast of colors is really cool. From your artwork, you usually only choose like two or three colors for these locations, and it looks great.
Thank you.
So I was just thinking, like, if you could give me some examples of. Can I just rattle off some of the places that you've drawn?
Sure.
Give me your go-to when you go there.
What do you mean?
Like, what do you order? Because
So
sure. Let's start with McSorley's. There's only two options.
Light or dark. I usually will order four. Two lights, two darks. Because I'm going to be with somebody else. So if they haven't been there before, they got to have a light and a dark. I don't think they taste that much different. I mean, the dark is like a light with a brown crayon dipped into it. But that's not why you're there. You're there because McSorley's is a boisterous, good-natured, bubbly place. And yeah, it can get overrun on the weekends with students and tourists, but that's fun too. I like to go off hours. I like to go on a Tuesday night or a Saturday afternoon. But yeah, you got to get a beer. Oh, you know what's good at McSorley's? The chili.
Yeah.
Oh, I kid you not. The chili is it's made with ground chickpeas.
That's the secret?
That's the secret.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I just ordered it late night.
Yeah. It works.
I'm kind of surprised that the Department of Health hasn't, influenced that place in a negative way.
I don't know.
I think that dust is grandfathered in.
Oh, yeah. They actually did make him clean the dust off of everything few years ago. Yeah, there's a book called One-on-One that was written by a guy named Rafe Bartholomew, whose dad and he are both bartenders at McSorley's, and he talked about the time they had to dust off everything. It was kind of traumatic for people. But then that became part of the story of McSorley's, taking off 80 years of dust.
Yeah.
off of those wishbones. You know those wishbones that are up there?
They had to
very carefully take the dust off each one.
I was wondering about that because I was in there about 2 months ago, and I was like, what? They're still pretty dusty, but I remember hearing a story about this.
Yeah. It's coming back. The dust is coming back. That's the good news. But, that actually, McSorley's, it's funny you mentioned that because that was sort of the genesis of the art project. Was an article from, I think it was 1941 or 2, that Joe Mitchell wrote for The New Yorker about McSorley's. And it was so loving and so sweet and so rich that when I first read it, I thought, man, I wish McSorley's was still around. I read it when I was living in Michigan. And when we got, well, then I found out soon enough, lo and behold, it still was. And it still had elements that Mitchell had written about too.
Yeah.
And that made me kind of want to do that. I think on some level, I wanted to write about bars because of Joe Mitchell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Let's see. Let me think of another one. Mm-hmm. Hank's Saloon.
Oh, well, that's a shot in a beer place. I mean, only times I've been at Hank's were for shows, you know, friends, bands. That's an interesting. He actually wrote about, I think, Hanks too, Joe Mitchell, indirectly, because he wrote a story about the Mohawk Indians that were steel workers and bridge builders. And they hung out at Hanks. They lived in North Gowanus. And Hanks was one of their hangout bars. It wasn't called Hanks then, but it was. It was the joint where they would hang out. But yeah, shot in a beer.
Yeah. And hopefully you're there during the day so you can hang out with Jeannie.
You know, I haven't done daytime there. It's always been for shows.
Man, Jeannie's the best. She was. I got her cast, and we did this this spot for Jimmy Kimmel Live. We did a few of them when he was filming in Brooklyn, and I guess it was like last month, maybe something like that, 2 months ago. Anyway, I got Jeannie in one of the sketches with that.
I think I had Greg there a couple of times, who was our old bartender down at Last Exit, a local dive of ours. That
back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, that's since gone the way of so many New York places. Yeah.
So, and this is probably a little self-serving for you, but Fort Defiance.
Yeah.
What's your go-to when you're there? It's not as a bartender or host, but as a patron.
Well, when I first started going there, it was the Irish coffee.
It's very good.
You got to have the Irish coffee. It's the Pete Wells said it's the best in the known world.
Yeah,
that's the New York Times.
That's Pete Wells.
That's not fake news.
He doesn't really give out too many compliments.
So you got to get the Irish coffee, but that's a good gateway at Fort Defiance, and then Sinjin, the boss. Well. He's such a cocktail aficionado. You got to go deep. I'll tell you what to get. Sazerac. I mean, he's going to do. It's got that New Orleans influence because he went to school down there and lived down there. As I said, get a Sazerac. That's a great way to go.
Yeah, cool, man.
Yeah, they do it right.
I had a Sazerac last night, and it had been a while. And someone was talking about it. I was like, you know what? I haven't had a Sazerac. I guess it had been since Tales of the Cocktail. Hmm. So I made one for the staff, and we tried it. And it's like, you know what? This is actually Actually, we thought about you because we knew you were going to be on the show today. I was like, you know what? I think he's still in New Orleans.
I had one down at Two Jacks on Decatur Street, and they make a hell of a Sazerac there with 15 or so dashes of Peychaud's, which is kind of interesting. It's very red. It's very red, but it's good. It's real good.
All right, man. Well, hey, we're right here at the end of the show. Thank you for coming on today and being our first guest of the new year.
Yeah, sure.
Also, thanks for bringing this great cocktail, and thanks, Zach Overman, for creating it. I can't wait for your book to come out, and when it does, we should have you back on the show.
Absolutely.
And until then, we'll come visit you at Fort Defiance. We'll see you around our very lovely neighborhood in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And I want one more cheers.
All right, cheers.
Cheers. All right, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Tune in to Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. and maybe a little less cocktail oriented, but still very good. And we will see you next week. Until then, cheers.
All right, cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.